Thank you, everyone, for coming to collaborate, to elevate, building your dream team as a creator. Today, we're just going to cover, you know, how to build your dream team as a creator, whether you're an entrepreneur, you know, personal brands, creative, artist. You know, obviously, we can't do any of this alone. We all need teams. So, that's what we're going to get into today. So today I have three special guests with me today, and I'll let them kind of hype themselves up, but they all have very kind of different backgrounds in the creator space. You know, we have a manager, creator, and entrepreneur, but, you know, they all wear many hats, obviously, so we're going to dive into some of their backgrounds, kind of how they met, hopefully, you know, provide a lot of value to everyone in attendance today. And then, we'll take some questions after. And just so you guys know, anybody who asks a question gets entered into a raffle to win a prize, which I can't say what that prize is until the very end. So hopefully that keeps you thinking of a good question to ask. All right, cool. So without further ado, let's get started. We'll start with you, Abraham, if you want to give kind of a background on who you are to the audience.
Yeah. Hello, testing. All right, that works. Cool. My name is Abraham Shaheen. I'm the co-founder of Zenful Note. We specialize in selling self-help books. We are the creators of the Shadow Work Journal, if you're familiar on TikTok, and we're a place for inner work and self-discovery. And we do a wide variety of things. We have a mobile app to track your and regulate your emotions, and we also sell card decks, and TikTok is kind of where we blew up, so happy to share more about that.
Hi, everyone. My name is Emma Brooks, and I'm a content creator. I have been in the space for about 3 years now, which is really crazy. I moved to LA from Louisiana as an intern in the fashion PR space, and I kind of just organically fell into social media, which it's been really an insane experience, but I'm really excited to talk to you guys today, especially because it all started with one person for me, and that is my manager. And it's lovely to be here. Thank you, guys.
Hey, guys. I'm Emma's manager. That's it. My name is Alana Dolgen. I'm the president of Homemade Projects. We're a full-service management company based out of LA. We are a touring company, a merchandising company. We have close ties to a record label, so we do a bunch of campaigns in that space. And I couldn't be more happy to be here because I started my first job in the influencer space was working for Jacob Pace at Flight House. Mm-hmm. And I met Emma through the Flight House DMs. How else are you supposed to meet people these days? Yeah, full circle
moment. And actually, I'll just give my background as well. I'm an internet entrepreneur. I've been doing this for more than 10 years. And so, the last company I started, Flight House, is one of the fastest growing media companies on TikTok. And so that's how me and Alana connected. And that's how Alana and Emma connected. So yeah, it all comes together. And actually, before we get started, I'm just curious to know how many people in the room by show of hands are entrepreneurs. Okay. Content creators. By the way, you can raise your hand twice if you'd like. What about musicians and artists? Okay, not so many. Cool. Good to know. Okay, sweet. Well, we already gave you the backgrounds, and so let's get into the good stuff, which is let's start with you guys. How'd you guys meet?
I'm better at telling the story, I think. As I mentioned, I worked in music for a long time, and right before COVID, I became, fortunately or unfortunately, very well-versed in breaking music on TikTok, which was a really cool skill set to have during that time. There's hundreds of agencies that do it now, but at the time, there was a handful of people, and I was one of them, and went through COVID, realized that I could actually do this full-time, started consulting for Flight House, and we were running campaigns all through COVID. And long story short, via DM, Emma had, I think, 70,000 followers on TikTok. And I DM'd her. We negotiated a price for a song promotion on a campaign that we normally wouldn't do. she did it. I loved her video. And I was like, you know what? Like, maybe, you know, we see how much these creators make, especially at that time. And I was like, maybe I should manage one of these people. She left me on red for a little bit. But then we connected on the phone. And it was just like, I was still living in New York. I was happy. We connected on the phone. And then that was it. It was like right before she blew up, and probably about a month after I started managing her. She had like unprecedented Instagram growth. She was growing like 100,000 followers a week. Probably had nothing to do with me, but I was there. And since then, I've moved to LA. I run a management company. We have about 45 clients, and it's literally started with her. So, yeah.
That's so nice.
Actually, I got a quick question on that note. Had you, Emma, been approached by managers before?
Yes. So basically the reason why I had left her on red for a weekend was because at that time, it was the early stages of like me starting to gain a following. So there was kind of some reach out from other people. And I obviously was just wanting to talk to everyone personally to see how I would connect with them, because before I entered social media, like, I always wanted to be in the industry, and like, whether with modeling and a film. So I was always like prepping in my head, like, how do I want to work with someone, and what qualities would they have if I worked with them? And I had a lot of insight from a lot of people back home, and just like, I asked so many questions growing up before I got into the space. So I was really just trying to test the waters. And then when we had talked, we talked for an hour and a half. I was literally at my job. And we got to know each other on a personal level very fast. But even on a professional level, I could tell that there was, she had this like hardworking ambition and energy. And she was so excited about everything that she was doing. And she was very honest. And for me, like, I could just hear it. We were on the phone. We hadn't even seen each other's faces yet. And I could just tell that she works her ass off. And I was like, out of everyone that I had met, I knew that she was the person that I wanted to start with. And I knew that I was her first client, but I just had a really great feeling about it. And to top it all off, like, we became best friends, like, immediately. So it was just, it seemed pretty perfect for me, and it has been.
I will say too, a very interesting part of the story, and to like, honesty is like what I care, it's the only thing I care about when it comes to working with clients. And with Emma, the greatest part about the story, which she never told me until like a year and a half later, was that she had a family that was super supportive when she moved to LA when she was 18 years old, by herself, had a job, she had 1 year to make it. And the day that we officially decided we were gonna work together was the day that hit a year. And I had no idea for like a year and a half. And so, I don't know, just very serendipitous, right time, right place, right person. Very lucky.
Incredible. What about you, Abraham? How'd you connect with your partner?
Yeah, so.
By the way, everyone, Kayla here is in the audience as well.
So yeah, Kayla Shaheen is my wife over here. We're the co-founders of Zenful Note. We actually met in college at Texas A&M. When I was a sophomore and she was a freshman. We've always been very entrepreneurial minded. In college, we had a startup called ThoughtSpace. It was basically the Upwork for students to get internships. The startup ended up failing during COVID. I went to go work at Cloudflare in growth and monetization. And over time, we wanted to continue starting businesses. And it was almost an accident that we stumbled upon self-help journals. So Kayla was kind of going through a tough time during COVID, experiencing some anxiety, and just like going into the corporate world right out of college is a bit overwhelming. So she started doing a lot of journaling and then stumbled across shadow work, and then she eventually created a guide for herself to do shadow work. And then she then created the Shadow Work Journal, which is a worldwide sensation now, over 1 million copies sold. You know, the story behind that is it actually was published in 2021, and it didn't blow up until 2023, but we were slowly growing, like building our following, just building the community that resonated with the product, sharing a lot of our experiences, and then people sharing their experiences with the product. And then we started seeing therapists reach out to us saying that they're using the Shadow Work Journal in their practices, and then people messaging us these lengthy stories about their experience and how it's helped them so much. And, you know, about a year in, we realized, like, this is something that could actually help change the world. People are telling us all these things and the ways that it's helping them. So we continued to develop the product. And when TikTok Shop came out, we started ramping up pretty quickly. I mean, we started off at like one sale a day, and then, you know, at one point we were selling 10,000 books a day, and it became the number one best-selling book in the United States 4 times in September. And a lot has followed since then. The book is now published in 25 different languages, and we've had an overwhelming response from the community, just so many people that have benefited from the product. It's super heartwarming to see the stories come in. And we've since launched an app called Zenful Note for people to track and regulate their emotions and do shadow work journaling. So yeah, this is a kind of a quick summary of how we got started.
Yeah, I'm glad you walked through the success of the Shadow Work Journal, because I was about to just start listing off stats. But yeah, over 1 million units, very impressive stuff, especially just the way you guys have gone about that. And so let's just talk a little bit about, you know, getting that product off the ground, because, you know, I think for a lot of us here, including myself, I mean, I've never put out a physical product, and I can only imagine how much work goes into not only thinking about, you know, what it is that people want, what they're going to buy, how to get it in front of them. So how do you guys kind of split up responsibilities? Was that something that, you know, you knew early on who was going to do what, or was it kind of a process over time where you found that, you know, maybe each of you were better at certain things?
Yeah, so, I mean, Kayla developed the product fully on her own, and Kayla's, you know, a great content creator. She's been creating content for some time now, so she kind of fell into the face of the company, as does the author do, creating content. So she was primarily focused on content creation, and I was primarily focused on paid advertising, affiliates, and then procurement. Imagine trying to get 100,000 books in like a very short period of time. Like, I spent a lot of my time speaking to different manufacturers, making sure the product got to the warehouse on time, and then also dealing with customers, because once you start to sell a lot of books, you know, maybe the USPS doesn't deliver the book on time, then you have to deal with those customers. So then just building out our support team and then building out our community engagement team is kind of how we split things up. But Kayla has been the face and the voice behind Zenful Note, and I've been more on the back end business operations side.
Cool. And what about, how many of you guys is it beyond you two on the team?
Yeah, so we have, I think, 4 people on the team now. We have a CTO. We have a graphic designer. We have a marketer. And we have a customer support rep. Actually, we have 2 of them. 3 customer support reps. So what is that, 6, 7?
6.
Yeah.
7.
So the team's growing every day. Actually, we have 8 now, because we just hired a full-time Android developer.
Maybe 9? Anybody wants to work?
We're looking for developers.
All right, I'm going to jump into a pretty straightforward question here. And it's for kind of everyone on the panel. How many times have you had to fire people on your team? Let's start with Alana, actually. In your career, how many times have you had to let someone go? How many times was it maybe not the right person?
Sure.
You know, and how many times, yeah, how often has that come up?
I am the least confrontational person you will ever meet in your life. I have fired 1 employee and I have fired 1 client. Or I guess you could say we fired each other. That's the only time it's ever happened. But I've fired 1 employee.
One employee.
It broke my soul.
Emma, have you ever had to fire someone?
Yes, and I've actually fired, I have fired the same person twice, which is which is not fun at all.
How does that
also,
work?
Well, you know.
They came back?
That's
my girl.
Yeah, I did it twice, just because I'm also very unconfrontational, really hate it. So, oh my God, no, I've fired the same person twice, and then I have fired another person. So two people. And yeah. Yes. I believe yes, two people.
So you're two.
We believe in second chances, you know, that's why we have to go back to the same person.
Which we'll get into that if second chances are a good thing.
Yeah, we can.
What about you, Abraham?
Yeah, so I mean, before Zenful Note at ThoughtSpace, I probably fired over 15 people, you know, when my startup ended up failing, so that's obviously not great. And then with Zenful Note, we've fired three people probably, two marketers and then like one developer. But yeah, just probably three with Zenful Note.
I'm trying to think for me. Too many to count. No, I'm kidding. I've had to let go of some people. Probably... Yeah, maybe five or six, somewhere in that range. I guess the reason I bring it up is because, you know, obviously it's easy to look at, you know, very successful teams and, you know, when everything's going good, but the reality of it is you will make mistakes hiring people. It's just inevitable. And admittedly, it's only through making that effort to bring people on that you start to kind of figure out, you know, what works, what doesn't, what am I looking for, do they fit the culture. You know, there's a lot of variables to look for. So I guess on that note, and yeah, we'll just kind of go. I guess I want to start with Alana, actually, because I'm sure with Emma, you know, you guys at this point probably have, I'm sure, a big team at Homemade. And then also, I assume maybe an agent. You know, I'm sure there's more than just you. So, I know you already talked a lot about like kind of how you guys connected, which was through, you know, hard work and the honesty. But in terms of people you are bringing on, like what are the consistent patterns that of people that have stuck around?
I do want to note though too, like I think one of the biggest similarities between all of us sitting on the stage is that like Homemade, we manage 45 clients and people are like, how big is your team? And it's literally four people. I don't want it to be much bigger than that. There's like a very clear reason for that. For Zenful, it sounds like based on what you're doing, the number of people you have on your staff is relatively small based on the output that you're doing. Yep. I'm not sure how many people are working at
also
your company
a small
right
team,
now.
Small team.
And so I say that to say that like, I think because I take this so personally and because I care so deeply, and of course no one's gonna care as much as me, we've always kept the team really small. I said like honesty and trust is everything, transparency, for me personally. Emma has an agent, Emma has a publicist, and Emma has a management team.
And my team has grown extensively over the years. Like I have probably like 10 people on my team.
Go off.
Which is crazy. But no, I think that there is something to say that like you learn a lot and like there's people that you'll hire that don't work for you, even if they say they do. And then you just have to be able to recognize that. And ultimately, if nothing changes after communicating, then you fire them.
Yeah,
which...
we've always said too that like for me, we worked with a past agency that didn't care or believe in Emma as much as I did, as much as she did, as much as our team did. So even though they're an amazing agency for a bunch of other people, for Emma it wasn't the right fit. And it wasn't until Emma was like really popping off the way that she was, that they're like, cool, what are we doing? And I was like, no, like that's not how this is gonna work. And so I really just only care about looking for people that frankly, like for lack of a better term, give a shit as much as I do, mm-hmm. and give a shit as much as Emma does about yeah. their career and the product and what we're doing and the long-term picture. And that's why outside of the one person, we really haven't had turnover on the client side or on the employee side in the last 3 years.
Cool. And Abraham, just to actually bring it, so we talked a little bit about green flags, but what about, you know, red flags? Like, have there been, you know, common traits of the people that didn't work out where, you know, is there something about them or?
Yeah, I think right when you hire someone, you should take what they do very seriously within the first 2 weeks, because if they don't perform within the first 2 weeks, that's when people are supposed to do their best, right? So that's like the biggest indicator that these people are probably not going to work out. Also, people that you bring in that aren't really part of the internal team and start asking about equity super early before they do anything is kind of a red flag. Even in my past startup, a lot of arguments have been around equity in the company. And it is my belief that you have to prove yourself to earn equity into something, because it isn't something that's handed out lightly. Those two things are definitely key. And then also people who complain. Like, even if it's not your job and it's out of the scope, you know, we would expect that you'd be excited to be a part of the team to go do that thing, because it's only going to make the company stronger and then move you up in the company and make us all more successful.
And I would have to agree. I mean, I think that of the people that I've stuck around with the longest has always been, yeah, just like you were saying, Alana, it's just people that give a shit as much as you do about what's at hand. Because, yeah, I think, you know, generally speaking, when you have someone on the boat that doesn't, usually, you know, it's a little bit of an overgeneralization, but it's kind of a waste of time at that point. And yeah, I didn't even know Homemade was four people.
Yeah.
You said four people on the management team?
Yeah, and I think, like, at the end of the day, like, also the common denominator here is that, like, we're just, like, in the business of people. Like, this is Emma's life. Like, this is not, like, just, you know, like, you don't, it's hard to go to work and come home and not think about what just happened that day. With Zenful Note, like, you guys are literally helping people's mental health, which is their everyday thing. You're changing the way that creators are able to engage with their fans. I mean, it's, like, a huge responsibility. So when people don't, it's hard to find, to not be able to work with someone that is as invested in that as we are.
Yep. And actually, on that note, because obviously it's like anyone that builds a team, you know, it's like we all start from, I mean, we're all one person when we begin building something. And then, you know, maybe you bring on a co-founder, maybe you hire someone. And I guess, yeah, I mean, you know, and we'll start with you, Abraham, but when do you know that it's time to bring someone on? You know, is it better to do stuff yourself in the beginning, or is it better to bring on someone that might not be 100% perfect for the job, but is an extra pair of hands?
Yeah, I think it all boils down to bandwidth. You get to a point where you just physically can't do the things. Even if you're the best at doing it, you really have to outsource. And if something can be automated, we try to automate it, and we try to give people chances to do so. So I think whenever you get to a point where you can afford to pay somebody to do something that would cost more of your time than to pay somebody, then you should do it. But initially, you know, you're typically doing the heavy lifting. When we first started, you know, we were shipping out books by hand. At one point, we were shipping out 800 books a day, just me and Kayla, and we were going crazy, like spending 8 hours a day packaging things when we should really be focused on creating content and like other aspects of the business. And we got to a point where we're like, okay, we need a 3PL. This is not a good use of our time. Makes more sense to pay somebody to do this. So that's kind of our gauge of, okay, if your time's worth more and you can afford to do that, then you should do that.
Yep. And how much time were you at that period where you were like hand shipping books, grinding?
I mean, we did that probably for the first 2 years. I mean, it was a lot slower in the beginning, but as it started to ramp up, it became unmanageable to the point where I was still working a full-time job, you know, and then we're trying to do all these things, run our businesses, and we're spending like 8 hours a day packing books up until like 4 a.m., and we want to do it all in one day because, you know, customers want their product now. So, yeah, that's kind of what happened.
Yep. Yeah, no, that's super cool. I mean, it just, I just wanted you to dive into that because, yeah, again, I mean, back to, it's easy to look at, you know, what, the 7 or 8 people you have, over 1 million units sold, you know, book deal with, what is it, Harper and Collins?
So, yeah, we've done a few book deals. The book's translated in 25 different countries. HarperCollins is the UK publisher, and Simon & Schuster is our publisher here in the United States.
Cool. But yeah, I mean, these things do, I mean, everyone here has put in, you know, years and years and years into getting to this point, you know, and it's usually, it's you yourself for the first 2 years, and then maybe you bring someone on year two, and then maybe it's four people after that, and then, you know, maybe on year 10, it's 30, but, you know, not every product is going to be a rocket ship, and admittedly, sometimes when it is a rocket ship, that kind of can set you up for failure because you don't actually know, you don't have a foundation set up for what it is that you're building. So, yeah, it's cool to hear that, that, you know, there is a period of time where it's just, you know, you're just grinding it out. And actually, one thing to add to that note, too, is I would encourage people to embrace more of doing the process themselves, you know, shipping out the books themselves, you know, answering every single DM, you know, video editing, programming, you know, whatever it might be, because, yeah, I think oftentimes, you know, I see this pattern sometimes where, you know, it's like, sometimes I feel like having a big team is kind of over-glorified, where it's like people think it's a flex to say, oh, yeah, I have a 50-person team. But it's like, you know, you can get the same done with four killers. So, yeah, I think that there's more that you can do solo in the beginning, and more often than not, you will have to in the beginning. But, yeah, was there anything? Cool. Emma, I wanted to ask you, so with your content in the beginning, obviously it was just you. I mean, at any point along that, did you find the need to collaborate with other creators to grow your following? Has that been an important element, or have you mostly been kind of focused on your own content to grow? Or when did collaborations become important?
That was so loud. For me, so funny. Whenever I first started, collaborating was very big. I was already living in LA before. So for me, like, I didn't want to go into any setting with people in social media and be like, oh, like, let's make a video together. Like, let's do this, because it just looks weird on my part. And I never wanted anyone to think that I was just using them for views, because that's not the kind of person that I am, and I also didn't really care at that time because it's not what I wanted to do. So I started off with social media on my own, with my own videos. Don't look at them. And then I was friends with these girls that invited me to live in a house with them, and we made videos together naturally, and not like, oh, we need to do this to grow one another, but just for fun. And that was my kind of form of collabing. Just like being with my friends and making videos, rather than like, oh, this is a strategical way to grow a following, because that just feels very transactional. But I do know that, like, especially for YouTubers, and I think that there's a way to do it where it doesn't feel like transactional. Like, I know that there's people that will become friends online and they're like, oh, like, we should create content together. And like, I think that whenever it comes from that space, it is more pure rather than like, oh, I'm using you. But back then for me, like, I was just not in that scene, so I didn't want to make anyone feel uncomfortable. So I just didn't do that. But yeah, I mean, I think collaborating is helpful, and it's useful, and it can be great for both of you guys. I just think that there's a way to go about it.
Yeah. I feel like when you begin creating content, it kind of creates like a magnet.
Yeah, and I mean, YouTubers,
people will reach out.
YouTubers do it all of the time, and I think it's super helpful, especially for that specific platform. Like, collaborating with other YouTube creators is helpful for both of them, and they are able to have a good time while doing it. And but I remember back in like 2020, 2021, people were doing what they called like collab days, and like going over to one person's house, and it's actually really crazy to think about that this is real, but people would just go to one person's house, and you're just seeing everybody set up with their tripods just filming videos, and it's crazy. That was a long time ago. It's crazy that even happened.
Cool. So, yeah, and I was gonna say, like, I would have to agree. Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I feel like I've seen some of these opportunities come up where, you know, people try and, like, sell collabs online or, you know, hey, you know, for $1,000 you can be in my TikTok. But yeah, ultimately, it just produces a very, like, inauthentic collaboration. And yeah, I think to Emma's point, I've seen creators be very successful where they just focus on, you know, their content, what they can control, and usually your collaborators will find you like that. Okay, awesome. And so with Alana and Emma, do you guys ever have disagreements?
Yep.
Let's hear about them.
Well, of course. I mean, also, like, working with someone, like, you are bound to have different opinions from someone, and it's all about communication and just, like, being able to work through that. And if I really feel passionate about something, I'm going to stand my ground, and if she feels very passionate about something, she's going to stand hers. And I mean, it's worked thus far.
I said to Jacob, we are a terrible pair for this panel because we are extremely close.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't say this is, like, standard or normal, but I'm extremely stubborn.
Yes,
which I'm reminded often. But I think also, like, we just have developed such respect for each other's opinions that even if we do argue, and it's not really arguing, it's bickering. It's fine. But yeah, we definitely,
yeah, but I even think that, like, anybody that you work with, whether you were really close or not, like, you will have a different opinion. You're not going to like, especially whenever your team starts to grow, there's a lot of voices and there's a lot of opinions, and it's hard to, not hard, but you have to really stay on track with what your what your conscience is saying and what your gut is telling you to do, and to make sure that you're staying true to yourself and, like, yes, taking in all of the strategy and all of the voices and, like, considering those opinions while also considering your own and saying, is this what I really want to do? Why do I want to do this? And, you know, just, like, making sure that everything stays aligned. But no, of course, I think that's just very normal. I think anybody would experience that.
And how do you guys work through them? You said, you know, at this point you just have so much respect for each other's opinions that you know when to...
We come to a middle ground, and...
I actually think sometimes, too, like, we take, like, we'll talk about something, and then we're like, okay. And then we, like, take some space for a second.
Yeah.
And then come back, and then she was like, you were right the whole time.
Not every time. Not every time.
She's right.
But yeah. No, but we will talk, and then we'll take a minute... Take a beat and then come back more.
Also, like, none of it is that serious. You know what I mean? Like, it's like at the end of the day, like, this is also, I said it before, like, it's her life. Mm-hmm. And like, this, her life has become her job. And so I'm very sensitive and very aware of that. So when we do have these arguments, like, it's never like we have to walk away from each other and, like, not talk the rest of the day.
Of course.
But
never that.
Would never do
never
that.
Never that.
but yeah, like, space and time and just, like,
space
processing.
Yeah, just, like, meeting in the middle, like, being level-headed and just being aware of, like, because sometimes you think with your emotions rather than, mm-hmm. like you just mm-hmm. need to be able to meet in the middle.
Emma's also been saying recently, which I think is quite helpful for me, if I give my unwarranted opinion these days, she's like, but enough for it. And I'm like,
yeah,
you're right. You didn't. So, you know.
Yeah, I definitely think space and time is important for, you know, most disagreements or emotional, you know, situations that may arise.
Just because, yeah, but there's always, it always works out. We're 3 years strong.
What about you, Abraham? Disagreements? How do you work through them?
Yeah, I think, you know, from the broader team, you know, we want to lead with compassion. We want to be stern with our team, but we also want to motivate them. So we never like to approach it in a negative way. It's more like, how can we make this better for the whole team so we can all succeed together? So we're always coming from a place of, like, let's make this thing the biggest and the best it can for all the people we're helping. Versus, like, blaming people. I think probably earlier on in my career, you know, that's something that I had to develop. You know, going from college to starting several companies, you kind of learn these things along the way. And I think emotional intelligence plays a key role in how you communicate with your team, because people are very interesting creatures. They can be triggered by, you know, a subtle comment. They can be triggered by something that happened in their day. And we want to be cognizant of that. So we're always trying to lead with compassion and try to understand each other's perspectives. We don't really have any, like, large disagreements, and we usually bring it to a vote to make it a little bit more democratic.
Cool. All right, let's move along to, I guess, kind of the future of, you know, what partnerships might look like, especially in a world where, you know, gatekeepers are becoming less important and, you know, technology is so accessible. And so, yeah, I guess, Abraham, we'll start with you just because I know that you've kind of been, you know, with the Shadow Work Journal, it seems like you guys have kind of been leaning a lot into, you know, affiliate programs. And I don't know, you didn't mention remote work last night, but I wanted to ask you about remote work in terms of, like, virtual assistants and stuff like that. Is this stuff you guys are thinking about?
Yeah, so, I mean, most of our employees are contractors. We're all engaged in remote work constantly. We do use different AI tools like repurpose.io to, like, repurpose content. I mean, we're constantly leveraging technology to, like, automate and streamline processes. So, I mean, that, I think that's something important to, like, keep up with the pace of how things are going. And then also just figuring out ways to use, like, what's new to basically move with technology. Because all the people who didn't adopt, for instance, TikTok Shop, they're probably regretting it now. Like, there's obviously a curve to these things, and they cycle out. But it's better to be early to a new product that may fail than to never have tried it in the beginning.
Is it too late for TikTok Shop?
I don't think it's too late for TikTok Shop. I actually was just on a call with my friend in the UK, and he started a pocket coloring book company on TikTok Shop, and they did 20K in revenue in the first month. So there is still hope on TikTok Shop, and this is TikTok Shop UK. So,
Alana, Emma, thoughts on you know, technology, future of partnerships. Do you see any trends, patterns, changes coming?
Yes to all of that. I think it's also similar back to the collaborations question. Like, for Emma, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it was really never about collaborating with other partners. It was, I think what grew her the most was her collaborations with the right brands, which I know seems quite obvious, but I feel like right now the reason why she has the continued success that she does, because a lot of influencers from her era, we always like to, not like to say, but like, it feels like it's like a lifespan of like 3 years, 4 years before they're like, I'm gonna go back to college now. And obviously my goal as a manager is to have that not end for her. And I think because of the brands that we've worked with and the way we've worked with them and the relationships we've fostered with them is like the most important thing. So we are blessed enough to work with less partners now and be more selective with who we work with. But I actually think it's like the most crucial thing.
And like long-term
partnerships. But even just the way we work with, like, for brands for one-offs. And things like that. It really, like, I think for the last 3 years, based on how we've worked with people,
comes back.
It's, yeah, like, that's my goal. If a brand doesn't come back to work with us again, we failed.
Yeah, that's a great point.
In my opinion. But I also think, like, in terms of the creator economy, I don't know if we're going to see, like, people blow up the same way. I think the most recent example I could think of is Alex Earle. I don't know if we're going to see people blowing up like that anymore. Like, we always talk about, like, the future being, I say, micro creators in a sense of but people that can actually go make a video and sell Zenful Note on TikTok Shop. We don't have a ton of creators that can do that. We have a few creators that use TikTok Shop, but it's not what my specific roster is there for. So we've been trying to differentiate people that actually can have an impact in that way, because I do believe that that is the future of influencer.
Yeah.
Well, it's been very interesting for me because the social media has changed a lot since I first started, and it's going to continue to change. There's so many people on every single app now, and the algorithms, especially TikTok's algorithm, has been kind of all over the place. There's no really way to track it. You used to be able to. That now it's just a free-for-all. TikTok Shop, it's a love-hate relationship with it from our end of things, just because it does kind of, there feels like there's an oversaturation of it, and I think that's a TikTok problem, not, like, I think TikTok Shop is perfect and amazing for small businesses and to support small businesses, but I think that TikTok needs to regulate it better. But I do agree, like, it's not the same as it used to be where, you could go on and go viral from posting consistently over a 2-week period of time. There's just, it takes a lot longer to make a video go viral. And then also the creators, that there's like, last year it was like Alex Earle and Jake Shane that really blew up. And right now it's Tara Yummy Carrington and Jake Weber and Johnny Gilbert. And they have been doing social media for 4 years. They were on YouTube and streaming for 4 years prior. And now they're going through the circulation again of like blowing up. So it's just, it's been very interesting. Long form content is coming back, which is honestly very, written content has been coming back, which is really exciting. People are really wanting to take away from being this clean girl, like clean, like has their life together. People are wanting to see more realness, the messy sides of things, which is really cool. I like the direction that social media is going in right now. Obviously, nothing's perfect. It's a double-edged sword, but I am excited for the future. It's never going to go away. Not really sure what's going to happen with TikTok, honestly, but love Instagram, love YouTube.
Snapchat.
Listen, Snapchat, underrated. Love it. And Pinterest, all of it, all of the apps. They're all great. But yeah, it's definitely been very interesting watching it evolve over the years. Yeah.
Well, I can't thank you guys enough. We're not done yet, but I can't thank you guys enough for bringing up all the points that I wanted to segue us into. So
that's
just
why we did it.
Work, guys.
We didn't
even
that,
plan
yeah.
that. Yeah, no, I thought that the notes about, you know, building long-term partnerships, I thought that was, That makes a ton of sense because, yeah, I would say the same thing. I mean, you know, it's like even just being on LinkedIn, you probably get, I don't know about you guys, but it's like probably get like a handful of sales messages every day, you know, and it kind of has you thinking like, oh, you know, and you buy into it and you start to think, do I need to sell like that? But realistically, it's like any of the most fruitful partnerships that have come that have like produced the most revenue, been the most successful, it's always the ones where it's like it starts on a human level. And, you know, you just connect and then opportunities come from that. And yeah, I mean, you know, everyone up here runs their ship the same way. I mean, it's all about like building small, tight-knit circles and really finding people who, you know, you have alignment with that will care just as much about the stuff that you're doing. Whether it's, you know, a co-founder or employee or even a client that's gonna, you know, pay your company revenue or a customer. I guess there's a lot of customers, but you get what I mean. And I also think that, you know, long form content, which you guys were saying, and blogs, you know, I totally see all that stuff coming back because, you know, I think short form content has been around for a long time and you know, it's a tough place it's a great place to build viewership. It's a hard place to build fans, right? And, you know, what's that?
That's a good point. I feel like there's a lot of people who like one-off go viral and they get a bunch of followers and then they're like only known for that like one thing. And now it's more about like building a very tight-knit community,
right.
Even as a micro-influencer. Like,
yeah, even
it's
as
about
a
engagement rate. If you have a high engagement rate, you know,
yeah,
it could be better than having a lot of followers.
And I see it, you know, I mean, it's like, you know, there's creators who are, you know, doing long-form content, vlogs, YouTube, and I mean, an example that I always give people is, you know, Kai Cenat, who's like one of the biggest live streamers on Twitch. You know, he's got 8 million followers. He went to New York and he said, hey, I'm going to give PS5s to my fans. And literally, like, flocks and flocks of people came. They had to get the SWAT team in. you know, it's just crazy the amount of pull that you have at that level when you have people that are watching your streams for hours a day. You know, they're so engaged. And it's the same thing, by the way, with a newsletter, a blog. And so I would just encourage, like, anybody that's making content, like, try and think about how can I entertain my audience for, you know, hours at a time and, you know, create long form. Create tight-knit small circles, produce a lot of value. So, alrighty, it's time for questions. So, I guess we'll just line up maybe.
Don't forget the raffle.
Also, this is the last session of the day, so they said we can go a little bit over. So, all right, let's go.
Hi, I'm a...
Oh, also, say your name as well, and I'll write you down for the raffle.
Okay, my name is Rowan.
All right, go ahead.
And I'm a filmmaker, but underneath the filmmaking, I've been part of an artist support group that kind of keeps me going and keeps me motivated. And I realized that there's a great opportunity to expand on that, help other people with developing their own sort of support group. So I wanted to hear a little bit more about kind of like long form connection with audiences, like Medium, Substack, other forms. I mean, everybody sort of understands that YouTube is kind of the default form of communication, but what are the other forms of communication that you see as developing in the future?
I can take that. Yeah, just I would say, you know, right now in the year that we're in, I'd say definitely live streaming, I think, is a big opportunity, specifically long-form live streaming, which is like Twitch, YouTube Live. I don't know a ton about TikTok Live. It feels to me like TikTok 2.0, where it's just live. Like, you know, people are just discovering you. But I think it's a good funnel. I don't know if it's good for building fans.
Good funnel. That's what you do with the funnel. But it's a good funnel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a funnel. And I think, you know, Substack, you know, when it comes to the newsletters, I think any newsletter, I think if you can build that, that's great. Because from what people have told me is, like, you just got to get to, like, 1,000 subscribers that are, you know, maybe over 50% reader open rate. And by the way, it's like, if you're, I have a newsletter, I'm not trying to plug myself, but I have a newsletter called The Pace Report that I put out every Thursday. But anyway, you know, like, someone told me this, but they were just like, hey, you know, I was talking to my friend and he was like, oh, why am I not signed up for the newsletter? And I was like, I can sign you up. And he's like, well, have you told, like, your friends about this or your colleagues? And I was like, no, I haven't. So, you know, you can start with, like, your 10 closest friends and just ask them, hey, can you sign up? And, you know, just start there. But, yeah.
Yeah, and also, like, if you're going to stream on all the platforms at once. Like, you don't want to double, triple make content when you can make content all at once and repurpose it through platforms. You're definitely going to have to splice it in different ways so it's more native to the platform. But, I mean, don't just create content for one platform. Create it for everything.
Hi, everyone. My name is Khloe Green. I'm a content creator who creates content about American history and politics. And I'm actually working on a book with Penguin Random House, so I'm very inspired by your story.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. So covering history and politics, I'm very well aware of, like, the TikTok ban and everything that's happening with that. With that in mind, how do you all fortify your business practice to exist and to operate agnostic of platforms and changing algorithms and new data laws that might come out, or even the ban of TikTok? Like, how do you market the Shadow Work Journal if TikTok can't be your platform to do it, theoretically?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, we're biggest on TikTok, but we do have a decent following on Instagram and Pinterest, and we're starting to build YouTube, so we do realize that being a cross-platform is super important. And we do collect a ton of, like, we have a bunch of affiliates too. So we try to bring people off one platform and move them into other platforms too. So if TikTok, you know, hopefully not, I don't think it's likely, but if it does go away, our business will still continue to function. But yeah, it's definitely a worry, it's definitely a risk, but I think there's still opportunity that we haven't tapped into on Instagram Reels and YouTube Shorts. We've just primarily been focused on TikTok, but we're starting to see growth there now that we're shifting our efforts to other platforms. So being cross-platform, super important. I checked you out, actually.
Thank you.
Yesterday after we met, so You're doing it right, for sure.
Thank you so much. If anyone wants to talk about a TikTok ban, I'm your guy.
Hey, what's good, y'all? I appreciate the panel. Like, I feel like I actually got something from everybody here, which that doesn't happen every single time, so thank you. It's been nice. So I'm Kim. I work with a bunch of content creators, and usually it's like behind the scenes and low-key and whatever, but recently I did a panel with like RDC World and Charles Brockman. So then I feel like after that panel, a lot of individuals were coming up to me, and they were asking me a bunch of questions about, you know, how to be successful with content, and I just realized there's actually a huge knowledge gap between like what top creators know about, you know, what works on social, like down to the level of, like, there's a bunch of like, you know, oh, hashtags, timing and all of that, but that's like nonsense, you know, like the actual stuff that works like psychologically. So it's interesting. A lot of people are talking to me about making a course for it. I feel like I'm realizing a lot of opportunities. So it's kind of two questions in here. The first one, how do y'all, you know, go through what opportunity, like how, what are y'all using? What values, I guess, are y'all using to determine what opportunities y'all want to pursue when you end up having a lot of different ways to go with things? And then I guess the second part of it is more directed at Zenful Note, where it's like one of the ways I was thinking about approaching this is like instead of like a $300 course, let's make it a workbook so they actually like do the work. So I was actually looking at the Shadow Work Journal, like this is something I could see that has impacted a lot of people, maybe doing something similar. Like obviously it's not mental health related, but it's just teaching the content, having you go through the book and everything as you go. Like maybe that could be a good approach. It's also affordable because now all of a sudden it'll be $20-something instead of $300. But even in that, there's a bunch of things, I'm almost done. There's a bunch of things when it comes to like, okay, you want to succeed as a creator. One of the things I'm sure you could look at is engagement rate, right? And it's just like, that could also be discouraging. And then mental health wise, I'm worrying about, okay, yes, you do need to like pay some attention to this, but how do I make sure I'm keeping your mental in check while you're trying to do this thing, be a creator? And it could take, like you guys said earlier, it could take like 4 years before you actually pop off. Like, how can I make sure that while giving them the tools, they're not just gonna get discouraged if things don't happen immediately?
That was a great question. That's like a lot of great questions. No, I same. I mean, do you want to tackle it first or?
Sure. In regards to the Zenful Note stuff, I think, you know, it seems like you have a lot of value to bring, and I think there's a level of value you should bring for free. So like whatever you thought you wanted to put in the course content, give that away for free, build that audience, and then you can bring in that other offering that you have. It could be in book format, could be digital. A lot of ebooks are starting to pop off too on TikTok. So I would lean into not having people pay for a course, but actually like releasing that course in like, you know, bite-sized clips on TikTok, on YouTube Shorts, to just build that community of people who are interested and resonate with you and who develop the fan base around that.
I think it's hard too though, because to your point, I'm not a content creator, so I've always leaned on my clients to be the people that tell me what's best. And that's like the message that I share with brands and partners when we're talking to them. But I also look at Emma's content and what Emma used to post, remember, don't look at it. What Emma used to post versus what she posts now and the influence she has then and the influence she has now is two entirely different things. And so I think it's really hard to put a formula on content creation, especially because the algorithm is the way it is on TikTok. And like for those people that do have that one video that, like, I think about like Tube Girl. I don't know if you guys are familiar with her, but it's like she went crazy viral. She went to Fashion Week, and now it's like, I think she just like kind of has gone back to her normal life. And so I say that to say I think it's really hard to formalize content creation, especially given, like, I don't know, what retirement home might put out versus what Emma might put out versus what lovely author in the back might put, you know what I mean?
True,
it's like,
true.
So I don't know. It's hard to put it into one course, I feel.
Yeah, to clarify, it's really more about two things. It's really more about your idea and then your packaging. It's focusing on that part. So it's not, it's like a bunch of brainstorming prompts and everything. It's not necessarily like
totally.
Dictating the content. That way it does fit into what you're saying, where it, when it changes it, like it's adaptable.
Well, I mean, even especially for like niches, like there's so many different, it's honestly better to be more successful in one, in a niche rather than trying to be everything. Like, I think that to your end point of like your mental health while the TikTok may not be supporting you, like I go through, it's so different now, it's so oversaturated, like I said earlier, that it's like 1 week I will not be getting the best engagement, but then this week it's great engagement, and there's so many highs and lows. So for me, what I've been working on is trying to detach the dopamine and serotonin levels that I get from getting good engagement and just trying to not take it as seriously. Like, it's going to do well. I still have the people that I love. And obviously, I'm trying to build. It's really hard to build right now. And just trying to be grateful for what I do have and just post what you want to post. But especially for your book, like, I think it's important to do finding a niche and, like, to not take your video so seriously. Like, if you want to create something, you create it and you put it out there. If it does well, it does well. If it doesn't, try again. And because that's the only way to do it, I believe. But when you're proud of something, like, you should post it. And if it doesn't do well, it doesn't mean it's not, it's bad. Sorry, I feel like it's such, like, a lot. Great. I'm like, thank you.
Hi, I'm Gabrielle from Gabrielle Talks Money, and I'm a micro-influencer who's, like, thinking about, you know, expanding my team. But as you know, it's, like, a financial commitment. So I was just wondering, when you first started out, what did that arrangement look like so that it was in the best interest of the content creator and not necessarily be taken advantage of?
Sure.
Yeah, so that's my question.
Because I'm super special and amazing. Mm. I was very fortunate enough to still work at Flighthouse when I started managing Emma. So for me, it was more about developing this relationship with my client, which I still lead with now. I think actually for the first few months, we didn't take any money. We just were focused on getting her in a financial place that was better so that she can focus on creating whatever content she wanted to make and start working with the people she wanted to work with. And then we kind of, and I always say
and
that.
And then she took money away
from
me.
And then I took all the money.
we have a 50-50 deal now.
No, we do not.
I'm joking. That's it's joke. Industry standards.
But we, okay. We don't do that. Sorry. Emma.
It's a joke.
We'll fight about it later. We take a percentage, obviously, but I always say to my clients, I was talking to a new client yesterday, we take, just to be transparent, we take 20%. It's pretty much industry standard when it comes to management. But I say, like, if there's any point in time, I think there's a lot of managers that do a deal, secure it, and then give it to you, and you have to handle it. And I say, like, for us, like, where I was, like, 20%. But if you ever feel like I'm not putting in the work that gets me my 20%, like, tell me, and let's have a conversation about it. Let's be open about it. I don't think a lot of managers are like that. I think it's more just like get the deal, take your percentage, move on. I don't know. But I also find that my creators that, it really doesn't happen often, but like the transparency of just having that conversation around it and like the work that's being done, like that's how we started. And obviously it's always been, of course, getting a publicist, financial commitment. Having an agency, not a financial commitment, but there is money that potentially comes out of your pocket because they're securing deals on your behalf. But, you know, we talk about publicity a lot because it's extremely expensive in the creator economy and what's worth it, what's not worth it. And so, I don't know, we pro and con it.
No, it's hard. I mean, yeah, because it costs a lot of money to have a team. But I think that the investment, if it's worth it, then it's worth it. Sorry, that's not a good answer. We just got very fortunate. Bad answer. But no, having a team is definitely an investment. But if they're worth your while, then you keep them around. And if you're like me, you fire them after 6 months. Remember?
Yeah.
Really quickly, we got 5 more minutes. So I guess maybe keep the questions quick. But also, we'll be around after, right? Will you guys be around? Yeah. I'll be around a little bit. Yeah. If you guys want to ask us questions after. But anyway, go ahead.
This question's for Abraham. I have a TikTok shop as well, and I was curious what you do to secure affiliates. What's the best method? Is it the affiliate center? Are you using, virtual assistants to be able to, like, cold DM thousands? And then can you talk about your experience with ads? How fruitful is the return on investment?
Yeah, all very great questions. So we do use TikTok shop's affiliate platform. That's a large funnel of where our content creators come from. They actually request samples from us. We've been very fortunate to have like a lot of videos go viral, so it kind of shows up there like as a product that, you know, affiliates can request. But we do reach out to affiliates. Most of the time they reach out to us, but I would try to onboard as many affiliates as you can within your niche, because you know, maybe 100 of them don't go viral, but that one that does will cover the cost of you giving the product to all those other ones. And just the sheer exposure you get on the platform, like it also does pour over to, you know, other platforms. So if you sell on Amazon too, you'll get the benefits on Amazon. From an ads perspective, I mean, we've been very fortunate. We're getting like 4x spend, 4x return on our ad spend. It did take a lot of ramping up. We do spend a good bit of money, and it basically got better over time as we were able to create our interest groups. You kind of like let the algorithm do its thing with these, like, you know, more broad campaigns, and then I think we've had the most success with retargeting campaigns and then just like targeting our following. But yeah, I wouldn't give up on it. I know some, like, initially we weren't profitable. We were like closer to break even. And then once you really find that sweet spot of your ideal customer, you can actually be profitable with TikTok ads.
Thank you.
And what was your name for the raffle?
Anne.
Is there time for one more question or
two more
questions?
Yeah, I guess let's do two more.
We got two questions, possibly three or four. My name is Tracy. I'm actually building on that last question. I'm curious about, like, at what point advertising comes into play, also publicity, and then what's the budget when you're first starting out with both of those initiatives?
Yeah, so, I mean, initially the budget's really low. I mean, you gotta have money to invest in ads. So, I mean, once we started making profit, we started allocating probably like 5 to 6% into our ad budgets of our revenues. And then we just essentially like ramped up our ad spend slowly as we were able to make it more profitable. Because as long as we could figure out how to get the ad to pay for itself, we continue to ramp up ad spend, because I would rather everybody in the world have this and me not make a dollar than nobody have it at all. Because also we do get the benefits of, when people do get the product, it's almost become a trend for people to share it. So it also has inherent long-term benefits for people to just have it.
It's all over my TikTok, truly.
Do you all have it?
I will send you one.
I do weekly therapy.
And at what point did you shift into advertising publicity?
So, I mean, we don't do any, like, mass media publicity. Like, a lot of our successes come from the community. You know, advertising is something we do regularly. It's basically to maintain our digital footprint. She did mention that, you know, sometimes there's roller coasters in how content does. So, like, most of our success came from organic content, which is still true today. But over time, like, you know, you're going to post a video and you're going to get 1,000 views and you're going to be scratching your head and a little worried. So that's when we're like, okay, like, let's supplement this by continuing to advertise and keep the momentum going. Because as long as you have momentum, you're going to hit that next viral video and keep that going. So we use it as like a momentum feature.
Thank you.
And your name? Sorry.
Tracy.
Unless you guys don't want to be entered for the raffle, but just trying
I'm
to help
Sharinda,
you out.
By the way. I'm Sharinda, Sharinda. I'm a travel content creator and filmmaker, and I had a very distinct question about, we talked a lot about building our team like outward, but what about like building your team with, say, your partner? So I am now a full-time creator, and my romantic partner is now full-time with me because of all the opportunities. I need more help, and we haven't hired too much out. So what advice would you give to someone? I know you can't give like distinct advice, but what is the best advice that you've got, or the best lesson you've learned from working with a romantic partner or a family member?
Better answer carefully.
Yeah, so clearly, I mean, me and Kayla are married, so
yeah.
I mean, we've been building this business for several years together, and I mean, there's obviously ups and downs, but
right.
As long as you guys are on the same page, like, if something's bugging you, like, we always check in with each other. We make sure that if one person's overwhelmed with something, maybe I can take something off her plate. She does that, vice versa. And then also, like, you know, you'll inherently get into disagreements on like direction, but at the end of the day, like if you guys care about each other and love each other, you're gonna do what's best for the team. So we kind of just take the time to talk that out, and we don't really fight at all. So it's right. It's okay. Pretty great. Like, she's my best friend. I love her and very grateful to have this. So.
Okay, nice. And that sounds perfect, beautiful. So do you all work to, like, when do you have boundaries for your, like, work time or different things? Or do you just work all day long? Or how exactly does that work? You have date nights? Like,
yeah, so I think it's pretty dynamic. It kind of depends on what's going on. Like,
absolutely.
Sometimes we'll have heavy meeting days. Sometimes yeah. We'll have content days. You know, we'll also check in with each other on our schedules and be like, all right, so sometimes we have this thing called Why Not Wednesday, where we block out all of Wednesday and we don't work on Wednesday, but we'll work on the weekend.
Oh, so that's
it's
cute.
Like, because like one of those things is like during the week is like when everybody wants to talk to you, but on the weekend right. Is when you can actually get your best work done. So we actually have Why Not Wednesday.
Thanks. Thank you. That's helpful.
All right, we are at time, so I'm just gonna finish up this raffle.
And do you have 30 seconds?
I'll be around. We'll be around after a little bit, right? Or yeah, we'll meet you outside. We're just gonna do this raffle. Sorry, she said time is up. I'm gonna do this raffle giveaway and then we'll do a quick outro. What was your name with the glasses and the gray sweater again? Kim. I wrote down Jim. I knew that wasn't right though, so that's why I didn't want to say it. But you won a shadow work journal, so we'll give this to you after. And maybe they'll sign it. I haven't talked to them about it yet, so. We'll see. Perfect. Okay, well, yeah, thank you guys so much for making it out today and for all the questions, honestly.
Thank you.
Just really appreciate everyone coming out. So, thank you.
Thanks guys. Everyone.